It's time for JT the Brick.
This is a Raider invasion of Southern California. I repeat, this is a Raider invasion of Southern California. So we get the Chargers coming off a 5-12 year. I repeat, because the last time we played them, we put 63 on their ass. 63 on their ass. Do you know anybody on God's green earth? Do you know anybody who said, I'm going to the window and bet the Chargers to win the Super Bowl? I don't. I know a lot of people.
If you combined all the Charger fans in Southern California, you can fit them in my pool.
JT the Brick.
Do you hear this crap? They're saying, oh, the Raiders have this. They don't have anything. But the Chargers do. And it's the same jerks who say, I love the Chargers roster. Every year. You idiot. You know nothing about the Raiders. The Chargers, America's new bandwagon, had 5 wins last year. Lost Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams. I'm fighting off the Charger fans who think they're going to the Super Bowl.
And now,
63 on their ass.
Here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back, everybody. It is hour number 2 of the broadcast. We're live from Lotus Broadcasting here in Vegas, our home studio of Raider Nation Radio. Tonight, you catch me on Sirius XM, Mad Dog Sports Radio, Channel 82. That'll be from 4 to 7 p.m. And then tomorrow, I'm going to drive from the mean streets of Summerlin all the way to Costa Mesa, as the sun will be coming up in the morning on a beautiful drive and be out there for a while. And we'll continue and we'll start off with Raiders training camp. And I think there's media availability tomorrow with the coach. And hopefully then we'll have some new sound, fresh sound. And I'm excited to be out there for a number of reasons. This is the hottest summer. It has been the hottest summer, I believe, on record, right? Am I wrong? It's felt extra hot. It's felt insane out here. And it's just good to get out of here for a little bit. Those who can't get out of here, we feel your pain, man. You're right. It's not easy. Man, people, especially the people that work outside, and the Raiders work outside, and that'll be a big part of this camp to see what they can get going, try to get this new offense in with Luke Getsy and figure it out quickly. Very quickly, LeBron is going to carry the United States flag at the Paris Olympics. Man, that's a topic. Now, that is the biggest honor of his career. If you look at LeBron's career, which is 4 championships, the all-time scoring record, he'll be in every Hall of Fame that matters, right? That's something. But to carry the flag at the Olympic Games, I'm good with that. You can say Simone Biles and wherever you want to go, Michael Phelps in the past, it's a high honor. Now, this team has struggled in their last game. When you look at what happened in their last game to win by 1 point, again, I was on a boys' trip, road trip, golf trip with my friends. I was unplugged for most of it. But his layup help beat South Sudan. Now, South Sudan's got a couple of good players, NBA-quality players on the team. That ain't good. That ain't good at all that they had that type of struggle in that game. That's not good. Now, I would assume if you're struggling with all those great players, and that's not the rotation that's going to happen. You know, former Hornets forward JT Thor made a 3-pointer with 20 seconds remaining. Some good players on that team made some shots, which I'm okay with. But if you're struggling with South Sudan, how the hell are you going to win the gold medal? I don't know how you're going to do it. Now, I don't know what's going to happen in this Olympic Games, but I would assume they're going to win. I would hope they're going to win. But, man, that would be an absolute nightmare if the United States of America struggles and can't find a way to win the gold medal. Now, the WNBA, which is a big topic here in Vegas because we have the 2-time defending champs, when the WNBA struggles or beats the Olympic team, that doesn't get on my radar. The whole story there, which a lot of national shows are leading with, is why isn't Caitlin Clark on the Olympic team? Because she just started basketball professionally, and they've been building these teams over the years. They have been. People are saying Brittany Griner, no, Caitlin Clark representing the country. I'm not going to get involved in the politics of women. I'm not going to shame women. I'm not going to do topics on women. That's like the third rail for me. Why do I want to do that? Caitlin Clark should be on the Olympic team. She should be coming off the bench at guard, or she should be a corner three shooter in a game where they're struggling and they bring her in. But the other gals have been preparing for this longer than her. That's a big topic overall. But back to the NBA. Oh, and congratulations to Albert Hall and the NBA Summer League staff. I went over there the first couple of days. I didn't get a chance to go on the back end of it, but it was another successful Summer League. A lot of kids had a good time. A lot of kids were able to go to both those gyms, Thomas and Mack and Cox Pavilion, and watch quality basketball. So it really does well for our economy out here in a time where a lot of people are nuts to come to Vegas. And you come here for Summer League, and it was a tremendous success again. So thanks to everybody involved there. The big story in the NFL is we found out that Jordan Love won't practice until he has a deal in place with the Packers, even though he's under contract. Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst said Monday, earlier today, before the team's first practice, that Love's reps informed him Saturday night of their plans before getting a deal done. And Gutekunst said they completely understand here. Love did report for training camp on time and take part in meetings and other training camp activities except for practice. Previously, he took the entire offseason program. He took part in all of it and mandatory minicamp for a $500,000 workout bonus. He wasn't going to leave that money on the table because he hasn't been paid a big contract yet. Now, we'll see what happens with him overall. Jordan Love's a good player. Last I looked, the Raiders beat him at Allegiant Stadium. He's not Bart Starr. He's not Brett Favre. He's not Aaron Rodgers. But the money in this league is crazy. So without a new deal, Love would have made $11 million this season on the final year of his mini extension he signed last May. That deal added one more year, the 2024 season, to his rookie contract. It was in lieu of the team picking up the fifth-year option on that deal. At the time, Green Bay gave Love $8.7 million in a signing bonus, and his base salary was only $1.1 million. In an era now where guys are making $50 million a year, the most recent quarterback deal was Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars. 5 years, $275, $200 million in guarantees. At $55 million a year, right, we're talking about Trevor Lawrence and the Bengals' Joe Burrow are tied for the highest average pay in the league. The reason why Jordan Love should get paid is he threw for 4,159 yards last year, 32 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions. So he beat Dak Prescott badly in the playoffs. He also started all 17 games. So why am I bringing this up today? Well, the Raiders don't have that problem. I mean, the Raiders don't have to pay Aiden O'Connell until he proves he could be very good. They're not going to pay Aiden O'Connell decent money to stay here and be a backup. I mean, Aiden O'Connell's got the best job in the league. He's got the number one job with the famed Raider organization if he doesn't lose it. If he plays well, I could see Aiden O'Connell getting Jordan Love money 2 years from now if he's playing better. And Gardner Minshew, what a deal. He has the same numbers as Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence has $200 million guaranteed and is only $15 million going to Gardner Minshew. There's not a big difference with the stats. I have the stats in front of me. They're almost identical. So those are some of the NFL topics that we're getting to today. Aaron Rodgers went on a podcast and basically said he went to Egypt and mini camp's not what it used to be. Don't worry about it. Relax and all that. If you're new to us, we're on YouTube every day. JT the Brick YT. We opened up the channel to build it. And we want to eventually get to a big number. We're only going to do that if you subscribe to the channel for free. JT the Brick YT. And everybody, just go to YouTube, click on my link in the bio at Twitter, at X, at JT the Brick. Just click it on, click subscribe, and you're in. And you get all the videos, all the reels, and you get a chance to talk to really good people during the commercial breaks, the people that are in there that are keeping the conversation going. So that's what we're going to do as we head out to this camp. As I said today, it was pretty cool to see everything I saw with the black hole, the history of the Raiders when they came out with their new tickets with many of the fans there. One of the most important fans in Raider history, Raider Man, checks in this summer, man. Raider Man, I hope you're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good, JT. Glad to hear from you. I'm glad to be home, brother, man. Been doing my best to just build life back. And brand new employment out here doing my own board, and so I've been out of touch because I got to do this thing, get these priorities straight. Things
absolutely
going pretty well. I'm out here in sunny Santa Rosa, not too far from where illustrious Snake was leaning up against the jukebox and studying game film and whatnot. But, you know, I heard you talking about real quick. I've tried to tap in and listen as much as I can. And I heard you bringing up the topics of the top 10, you know, most memorable games. And, you know, of course, it's a wide open slate. You can plug any game in there as far as Raiders history is concerned because they were all great, especially if you were there to experience them. But for me, I'm going to go a little bit selfish. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take you back in the world of that 2000, 2000, it was 2000, 2001. No, it was 2000. My God, this time is flying. But the game that they call it the Ghost of Raider, well, we called it the Ghost of Raider Man game. The game we beat the Dolphins 27-0. I was back down in the black hole for the first time in a few weeks after getting my gunshot situation in December. But you know, the thing about it was that game was the game that propelled us back into like league contention. Of course, we had to battle a bunch of demons to get back into playoff contention and everything. And, you know, battling the pass in the wild card, we beat Tennessee and all the rest of that kind of stuff. But to see us get into the game, man, and execute the way that we did, to produce that shutout, and me and my weakened condition in there screaming my head off, literally almost probably trying to kill myself just screaming, because we never know. No day is guaranteed. I went all in on that game, man. That was one of the most fun games I ever been a part of in my life. We still were able to take the dummy in at that time. Shouts out to Harry Krause. But, you know, they wouldn't let me have the dummy. But just to be there and be there with all my family and friends, man, that was the pinnacle moment for me. Shout out to my Unc Violator, man. I saw the new tickets come out and get Grayson to Dine. And just wanted to, you know, shout out, congratulations to him. Shouts out to Unc Gorilla and all the rest of the folks out there, man. Mm-hmm. Raider Man working his way back. Everybody's been calling in and checking on me. It's been real. I ain't going to poo-poo it or whatever. I'm tired of making fun of it and trying to, you know, build myself up. But, you know, life continues, and I'm grateful to be here. So, you know, everybody that's out there, man, keep Raider Nation alive. Keep it pumping. I wish I was over there with you, but I'm doing what I got to do right now.
Keep doing it.
See you when I'm looking at it.
Hope to see you soon, Raider, man. Big part of our show and our history here as we talk about the top 10 games of all time. And I remember that game well. That was the countdown. That was the blowout of the Dolphins. And you know, important game. Important game. When I came to the Raiders in 1998, the first 4 years with the team, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, and 2002, my first 5 years were pretty damn good. I mean, really good. And I was blessed to have Raider rallies in front of 10,000 people at Jack London Square, some pretty big events in Oakland, to have my name in the black hole with the black hole. And that was good stuff. Those are great memories. I want to make new memories here in Vegas. It's time to make new memories here in Vegas with the fans. And I thought with these tickets representing the great fans of Raider Nation, as they came out in the season ticket pirate box, I felt good. I felt like, ooh, man, I don't want to get superstitious, but I like that. Maybe that's something that can propel everybody this year, is the turnaround of the Raiders with the fans and the fans' faces on the tickets. At least we can dream of that. 702-365-9200. All right. Top 10 games in Raider history. Let's get to number 10. Our throw again as we open it up. January 19th, 2003, the AFC Championship.
We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
He is going to get inside the five. Touchdown!
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Number 10.
Okay, this game at number 10, we had 10A and 10B. Okay, they had two here at number 10. The rest of it will be a single game. But we had to fit this one in today at number 10. And selfishly for me, it's the most memorable game of my time with the Raiders. There is no game I remember more. No game that was more significant. The Super Bowl would have been in San Diego against the Tampa Bay Bucks, but the Raiders didn't win that game. It was the game before that. January 19th, 2003, the AFC Championship game against the Tennessee Titans. I'll never forget the excitement. Normally, I would travel up on game day. How risky was that? What was I thinking back then? 17 years I commuted, 17 years to Oakland. And people thought I lived in Oakland. No, or the Bay. I lived in Vegas. And I was driving up there, flying up there. I went up there that Friday for this Sunday game because of Ricky's. And the place was off the hook. The whole city of Oakland, everywhere, from Lake Merritt to Alameda, San Leandro, it was like New Year's Eve. And it was only 19 days after New Year's Eve. So people were festive. The weather was amazing. And CBS got in touch with me asking I don't know how they did it. They called me directly and said that they wanted to open up the broadcast in the black hole. They wanted the broadcasters, Mike Ditka, who turned out to play a big role in my life, Jim Nance, and Jerry Glanville. How about that for a name, I believe? They were in the black hole, and we opened up the gate. I didn't even know there was a gate there. It was a gate that you can come from the field, and they put those guys in the black hole as the broadcast opened. And it was just incredible. Raiders came out and played one of the finest games in Raider history in a game where they had to against a very good Titans team. Their ground game, Steve Air McNair was a brilliant player. They had a good defense. They were rough and tough. Opening up with the lead 7-0. Here's Gannon to Jerry Porter.
Third and goal. Gannon with time. Lots of time. Throws. End zone. Touchdown. Jerry Porter. The Raiders made that look easy.
Well, what they did this time, the defense covers everybody, but nobody able to get pressure or even get close to Rich Gannon. Wow, what a throw. That was tight. Rich Gannon snuck it in there, though.
Janikowski's extra point is good.
Well, you can just hear the crowd in the background. Greg Gumbel on the call here and Phil Sims. And this was special when you think about what was going to happen in this game and what was going to go down. Now, Gannon had an unbelievable year with Charlie Garner. Garner was a great player outside the tackles. He could run, catch a screen pass. He could take a ball, break a tackle. Charlie Garner, a very important piece to the Raiders' AFC championship.
Second and six. Gannon flips over the middle. That's complete. Garner inside the five in the end zone. We have a marker down. The signal is a touchdown, and let's check the flag.
Before the pass was thrown, illegal contact, defense, number 31. The penalty is declined. The play results in a first down.
Well, now it's ruled a first down, but there was one official on the near side of the field that ruled touchdown, and now they say it is touchdown.
Big touchdown right there because the Raiders went up 14-7 in the first quarter, and the game was tight. Man, the game was tight because this game was going to be a game that I thought was going to come down to the final minute. It didn't turn out to be that way, but the Raiders enjoyed playing this game with the lead. How about Gannon to Jolly for this touchdown?
40 carries for 118 yards and 8 touchdowns this season. Fake to Crockett. Gannon lost to the end zone. Everyone around the league knows you get inside the five. If you're the Raiders, you give the ball to Zach Crockett. So Gannon fakes to Crockett, and Doug Jolly is wide open in the end zone.
Well, Zach Crockett on the goal line, but Doug Jolly there. Doug Jolly was a really good player. But this season and the season before was about Rich Gannon, the MVP of the NFL. And Gannon, in the fourth quarter with the game on the line, puts it away with this run.
Gannon. All kinds of time, on the run, to the five, touchdown! Whoever was supposed to contain on the far side, it didn't happen.
The defense is not even thinking of keeping the quarterback in the pocket. Rich Gannon, more active running the football today, and what a big moment and decision when to run that time leads to a touchdown.
Gannon, three touchdown passes, he rushes for his first of the day.
All right, so that was a big deal for Rich Gannon. Rich had the ability to tuck and run as good as anybody. And he didn't do it all the time because we always kept his head up, and Rich would find someone open. He had just an array of weapons, a lot like this team this year. We have weapons, okay? We arguably, Jerry Rice being on the team and Tim Brown, it's hard to say you have better weapons than two Hall of Famers, but Devontae is going to the Hall of Fame. Now we have Jacoby Myers. I'm a big Brock Bowers guy all of a sudden. Michael Mayer, Trey Tucker. Raiders got Zamir White. They got a lot of weapons on the offensive side. To put the game away, no better than Zach Crockett, who was the beast around the goal line, and this was the end where the Titans knew they were finished.
Second and six. Give it to Zach Crockett. Crockett, touchdown!
Tennessee was hoping that the Raiders would get tired and they could beat them in the fourth quarter. But what you're seeing is a physically well-prepared football team who doesn't get tired and is winning the battle in the fourth quarter.
That's great. So they put the game away. By that time, you know, doing the post game like I still do now, I remember leaving the field back then, leaving the field, sitting in Mark Davis's box, the celebration with the greats who were around in that box, memorable, and heading over to the West Side Club for the post game show. That was 2 hours back then with the great David Hum, Artie Gigantino, George Atkinson. And, man, if you would have pulled me at that point in time and asked me, man, I thought this was going to happen every year. It's arguably the last significant, iconic victory that the Raiders have had since. And I cannot believe I just said that. That's how long it's been. January 19th, 2003. We're in 2024. That's how long it's been since the Raiders have won the AFC championship game. And I thought if you asked me at that time, I'd said they'd have been three or four AFC championship games. And it hasn't happened. And I'll never forget this game. I got an AFC championship ring. It's one of the prized possessions for my son someday that I love. And to be a part of that experience changed my life for the better. So I'll never forget that game. We put that in as number 10 of the top 10 greatest Raider games of all time. I know many people who are listening today have memories of that game. Let's hear a few. 702-365-9200 if you want to get in. Post-game afterwards, give Bill Callahan credit. You know, the way it ended with Gruden and the trade to Tampa Bay, we would face Gruden the following week and lose. But this was Bill Callahan's moment.
Bill Callahan, you are the first rookie head coach since George Seifert in 1989 to take his team to the Super Bowl. How do you put it in words, what you've just accomplished?
Well, I really can't. But first off, I'd like to extend my congratulations to Mr. and Mrs. Al Davis, to our players and coaches, their spouses, and to the best fans in football, the Raider Nation.
Wow, I just got chills. I forgot that. That was when Lincoln Kennedy was holding up the AFC Championship trophy, right? Lincoln Kennedy in front of the stage, big Link with the trophy over his head. That was amazing, and the crowd didn't leave, man. Crowd was there. The roar of that crowd just got my hair to stand up on my arms there to hear Bill Callahan say that. Rich Gannon, post-game as an AFC champion.
Rich Gannon tonight throws three touchdowns, runs for another as the leading rusher for the Raiders. And I think if anybody wondered about that MVP award, you left no doubt here tonight. How does this, your finest performance and accomplishments, feel right now?
Well, I'll tell you what, we have a great football team, and it was a total team effort tonight. But I'll tell you what, we have some unfinished business. We keep our focus this week and go down and play our best game next week.
Do you sense how people around the country have really related to this team of veterans who've kind of come together? Some have been to Super Bowls with other teams. This will be your first trip to the Super Bowl, but what it means to go there at this stage of your career?
Well, I'm excited. We've worked very hard this year, and we've overcome some adversity. It's a team that's stuck together all through it all, and we're just real excited for the opportunity.
Good luck next week, Rich.
Very interesting. Again, this is the first time I'm hearing this sound in 20 years. Swear to God, haven't seen this, haven't seen it on YouTube. I can't believe what I'm hearing right now. Bobby grabbed all this with the help of the Raiders. This is fantastic. Bobby got this. This is really, really, really good sound. That you look at Rich Gannon and what happened the following week. Barrett Robbins went AWOL in Tijuana. There was a lot of controversy the second week. We went from the high. I was a part of that on the broadcast team, went from that to getting boat raced and getting beat badly in the Super Bowl. So there's a lesson to be learned about focus, and there was no bye week. Went right from there to the Super Bowl, remember, back then. Jerry Rice, the greatest receiver of all time, post-game AFC champion with the Oakland Raiders.
Jerry Rice. This is why you came to Oakland, I know.
Yes, you know, and I want to thank the Raider Nation. I want to thank my teammates because, you know, we fought all year long. We fought hard. We just kept fighting. You know, when we lost four games, this team really stuck together. We fought through it, and now we're going to the, you know, we're going to the Super Bowl.
Jerry Rice been to all those Super Bowls and arguably the greatest Super Bowl player of all time, Jerry Rice, doing it as a Raider there. And finally, one of my favorite Raiders, Bill Romanowski, as I call him, RomoCop. And for Romanowski, going and four Super Bowls for Romo, winning four Super Bowls, one of the great linebackers in big game history, played a huge role with the Raiders getting to the Super Bowl.
Romo, you're going back to another Super Bowl as well. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to thank my teammates, the greatest fans in the league right there. Woo! Raiders! Raiders!
Charlie Garner.
Raiders!
Hey, somebody's got to take this home.
That's good. Really good. That made my day today, hearing all the sound. Great job by Bobby getting all the great sound. That is January 19th, 2003, coming in at number 10. Number 10 of the Raiders' greatest games of all time. Unfinished business. That was a dominant performance. Dominant performance. And I don't recall how I got home after that game. Bart, I think there was a party at the Oakland Airport Hilton. Fans were at Ricky's. Fans were in the parking lot late. It truly was a memory of a lifetime. It was a memory of a lifetime. I hope we get memories like this. I know we're going to get them in Vegas. I just don't know when. I know we're going to get them. It's going to happen, but I hope they happen sooner than later. David in San Leandro, home of Ricky's. Go ahead, David.
JP, glad I found you in the app. I've been listening to you and Q all summer. That was my 22nd birthday, the AFC Championship game. My father-in-law was a season ticket holder. He and his friend took me out to like brunch, lunch to Banchero's in Hayward before that game. And Metallica performed in the parking lot before that game. That was amazing. And I want to say that Tennessee, they had to beat the Steelers for us to host that game. We weren't the number one seed. So a lot of stuff had to fall in place for that game to happen in Oakland. I was a young buck, so I went a little too hard. I don't remember the details of that game. So I'm glad you recapped it, man. But you made my day playing that one. I got a lot of good memories at the Coliseum, and that was a special day. Go Raiders.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. That's why we did this, right? That's why we did this. And again, I have not, this is Bobby who put the sound together. I did not know this sound existed. I obviously knew it existed with the post game for sure, but, you know, to hear that again. So we're recapping one of the, maybe the last great significant Raider victory in a big game. It was, you know, we've been waiting for the playoffs. The Raiders have been to the playoffs since that, but that was the AFC Championship game. January 19th, 2003 in Oakland, CBS Sports on the call. And that was brought to you by the DiCastaverde Law Group. Alex and Orlando DiCastaverde, proud partners of our top 10 Raider games of all time. As we go to beautiful Costa Mesa tomorrow, we're excited to tell you what we got lined up there.
Three successful seasons as the Chargers receivers coach would soon lead Al Davis, at age 32, to become the youngest man ever named head coach and general manager of a professional football team. In 1963, Al Davis became head coach of the woeful Oakland Raiders and guided the team to what was, at that time, the greatest single season improvement ever.
The coaching staff the year before I came was 1-13. And we went 10-4. So that was the greatest turnaround. I was coach of the year, professional football. I was coach of the year. That was big with me.
That's a big moment as we chronicled that game. Also today, we gave you today the AFC Championship game of 2003. And then we had to go back to 1963 to September 7th, Al Davis's first win as a head coach of the Oakland Raiders. That's a hell of a day today. If you want to comment on either one of those games, a couple of people are texting me and tweeting at me about that game, the AFC Championship game where Metallica played. If you were at that game, today's the day for you to check in. Let us know about it, 702-365-9200. Raider Mikey out there in Southern California says, JT, they shut the freeway off ramps because we were tailgating. Yeah, that was controlled chaos back in the day, man. That was really controlled chaos from back in the day and what happened there. And how does that happen again? Well, you got to, you know, it's not luck. The Raiders weren't lucky. But we, as we looked at some of these games that we've been talking about, the Sugar Bear Hamilton game where the Raiders were able to benefit from a late hit on Stabler to win and go and get it done. I mean, a lot of things are happening to get there. For me, you know, if you look at glasses half full or glasses half empty, I said this last week, the 1970s, the Raiders were the best team in football until the championship game that they lost. You could say arguably they were better and had better players or just as good as the Steelers, the 72 Dolphins, Super Bowl IV Kansas City, all those teams. Came down to one game. And there's a lot of Super Bowls that were left on the table by the Raiders back then, a lot of them. And we'll see what happens going forward. Now, can the Raiders catch a break and make the playoffs and then get on a run like they did with Jim Plunkett in a wild card victory, the first team ever to win a wild card? You better hope so. That's what we got to hope so. Just get in. Not many people are going to give the Raiders a chance this year to make the playoffs. But I'm going to because I have to sit here in this seat, and I love it, and I want the Raiders to make the playoffs. Because the last couple of years, they've been close. They made the playoffs under Rich Bisaccia. Last year, if they don't lose 3-0 to Minnesota, I think they're in. Put up 63 right after that. They were playing good football. They were playing very good football. And I think if they would have got into the playoffs, I'm not saying they would have won the Super Bowl, beaten Kansas City, but I think they could have went toe-to-toe with some of those playoff teams. This year, they're going to need a lot to happen, especially the quarterback position. And the quarterback position will be highlighted heavily here in camp. Heavily here in camp as the Raiders are making their return. You know, they're going back to Southern California. We have some restrictions, you know that, on what we can say. There's partnership agreements, you know, the league allowing the Raiders to go there and all that. I'm just going to concentrate on football. But the Raiders will be set up in Costa Mesa. We've had great memories in Napa. And now they go there for the first time to Southern California since relocating to Vegas in 2020. So I'm excited about that. There's some NFL policy that the Raiders are not going to be able to promote or market in SoCal in a particular way, so we won't do it. Instead, I'll follow the rules. It's not a big deal for me. For me, this is a working relief, you know, because once we start, man, I go 6 days a week. Q works even longer. He has longer shifts. He does a national show every night of the week. I do it 2 to 3 nights a week, and I work all day on game day, the whole entire Sunday, from the pregame show all the way to my night show at 11 o'clock at night. And I want to enjoy this camp. I want this camp to be exciting. I want to see how Antonio Pierce is able to run the team in his first camp. So the Rams and the Chargers, that's their market there. We all know what the Raiders mean. We all know what the Raiders mean to Southern California. And look, I'm just going to focus on a radio show and getting people on the radio. And it's not going to be a silent camp. It's going to be a lot of fun. And hopefully the players are coming on. I already got a text from two players who hit me up that can't wait to see me out there and obviously come on. And Will Kiss does a great job, and everybody else out there. So what do you remember about the AFC championship game versus the Titans, 702-365-9200? Someone asked me on the YouTube to mention what I remember about Metallica. I had to host a pregame show, and I believe we did that one outside in that area between Oracle, the NBA arena, and the football stadium. And it was a big crowd. I mean, that's one of the I probably did 4 or 5 pregame shows outside in my Raider career in Oakland that had a walk-up crowd. Because remember, Raider fans arrive late to a Raider game because they're tailgating. So we've done these pregame shows in front of 5, 10,000 people. Now we do them at the Torch, and we get a couple of thousand people out there right before we sign off because they're just there because the structure holds that many people, and they're up there getting a beverage and doing that. But I remember being told that Metallica was going to play, and I walked out to the corner of that parking lot and saw a song or two as they were playing in that trailer and looked out and looked behind me, and I said, I got to go. I got to get back to be on the air. And I saw that thing firsthand and walked back. And I was just, oh, my God. And we had to do a pregame show and do that. And it was a national pregame show. And then getting down on the field so in the black hole that the CBS Jim Nance crew can get in there. And they got in there, and that was a lot of fun. And Raider fans were hanging all over Nance, hanging all over Ditka. That was really cool. I think Randy Cross might have been the other one with Glanville. Someone knows what that is. Tweet at me. There's a photo of that out there. And then the Raiders went out and played a really good game. A really good game. Great weather. Dominant performance. And after that, the rest was history. So we might as well say what happened next. What happened next will, I think, be controversial for 100 years from now on Barrett Robbins, who was a friend, guy I knew on a first-name basis. Good guy. Really good guy. Oh, my God. Barrett Robbins was great, but he had some personal issues that got the best of him the week of the Super Bowl. And when he went down and went MIA and the story broke, and Bruce Allen, who was a mentor to me, was the GM at the time, senior assistant, told me about it. I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. Funny story about that for me is I went down there and the Raiders nicely got me a room that they didn't tell me about at the Aventine at the Hyatt there, and I never checked in. I had a gorgeous $500 a night room where the team was, and I never knew it was available to me, so I stayed at my buddy's house. And so I'm sitting there on the pregame show on Super Bowl Sunday. We're in the booth at Charger Stadium, and Bruce Allen comes up to me and says, "You're going to go with it first." Okay, I knew what he meant. Barrett Robbins is not playing. And I'm sitting there, and we're in that tight booth. It's just a terrible booth for the Chargers, but we're overlooking the 50-yard line, sun-drenched, music playing, people not even inside yet for the Super Bowl. I'm hosting the pregame with Artie Gigantino, George Atkinson, and David Hum. David was back here in Vegas. And I said, "I have an announcement. Barrett Robbins will not play today. It's official. He was inactive." So we do the first segment of that, and then all of a sudden, I finish it, and I take my headset off, and someone taps me on the shoulder. True story on my kids. I look over. It's Al Michaels, the Al Michaels, and he goes, "Did you say that? Can you confirm that Barrett Robbins isn't playing?" I said, "Yeah, confirmed." And they're doing the broadcast, and that was it. They were going to find out anyway, but they had it on. They were listening in the booth next to us, and that's how the day started. So I was with my mentor, a guy by the name of Andrew Ashwood. I wrote my book about the handoff, and I sat with him inside the game, during the game. And then in the fourth quarter, I said to him, "Bubba, I got to go." And I got my credential, I got in the elevator, and I went back for the fourth quarter. And I'll never, never forget the fact that I was there and went to the booth and looked at Bruce Allen, and he was sitting in the stairs in the booth. And not very happy. Game was a blowout in the fourth quarter. And I just remember the energy was sucked right out of me. Said, "I cannot believe after the Titan game, the Sunday before, and how glorious that was, they were in there." So after the game, we do the post-game show. The building is empty. Because back then, man, they made us do like a two-hour post-game, man. And the game ends. And I take my headset off, and I'm going to take the trolley back to my buddy's house. My buddy lived in Mission Hills. I'm taking the trolley. I got my backpack with my stuff, and my luggage is at my buddy's house. And I get to my buddy's house. True story. And I'm sitting there, and my buddy's got no food in his house. And I make a bowl of Raisin Bran. I make a bowl of cereal, and I'm eating a bowl of cereal, and I'm watching SportsCenter. And the low lights, the highlights of the game. And that's the last thing I remember, eating this bowl of cereal. So I end up getting back after that to the Bay Area a couple days later, and Bruce Allen calls me. He goes, "Where were you?" I go, "What do you mean, where was I? I was the last one out of the stadium." He goes, No. "Why weren't you at the party?" I go, "What party?" He goes, "We had a Super Bowl party. We already paid for it. Shrimp the size of your forearm. Banned. Everybody. Win or lose, there's a Super Bowl party. They don't cancel the Super Bowl party if you lose." And I missed out on this incredible 5-star party at the team hotel because I wasn't aware of it. That's why, Bobby, I still get criticism for not checking my emails. You know, you got to check your emails back then. And that was it. And then to finish up on that, about, I don't know, 2 months later, Bruce Allen called me and said, "What's your ring size? You were voted on by the team to get a ring." I think I was one of 6 people to get a ring, AFC championship ring. And Mr. Davis waited until the Buccaneers got their Super Bowl ring because he wanted it to be better and more expensive than the Bucks, and it was. And it had five diamonds from the three Super Bowl victories and the two losses. And I remember that as my Raisin Bran story. We'll wrap up the show on the other side as we get rolling here. That's the memory. The AFC Championship game. And on top of that, we gave you Al Davis' first win as a head coach. September 7th, 1963. Oh, Raisin Cane's Chicken Fingers. One love. You know, they're our proud partner as we head to Costa Mesa for Raisin Cane's Chicken Fingers. It's about training camp. One love.
The vision for Lamar Jackson, and it's a vision, it's something you see it like it's already happened. You can see it like it's already been done. The victory has already been won when you pour into a vision. And the vision that we have together is that Lamar Jackson is going to become and be known and be recognized as the greatest quarterback ever to play in the history of the National Football League. That's the vision, all right? It's going to happen by Lamar, his work ethic, and his brilliant talent. By all of us pouring into that effort together as a team, teamwork, and by the grace of God and God's goodwill.
That's a really good soundbite, what Harbaugh is saying, which you should say. You know, Lamar Jackson is going to be an all-time great, but he's not going to be Brady or Mahomes. No chance. And look, unless he wins four Super Bowls coming up here through an AFC gauntlet. But Lamar is going to be the quarterback that has the most rushing yards of all time, which is really important in a league that had Michael Vick, Steve Young, all these great quarterbacks, right? We talked about Rich Gannon for a short period of time and what he could do. But he's not going to win the Super. If he doesn't win Super Bowls, he will not be considered the greatest of all time. But statistically, he's great. He can make every throw. He's a brilliant quarterback. And that's what your coach should do. Your head coach should tell everybody that I got the best quarterback. Because he is one of the best quarterbacks. He's the MVP. So he should be able to go into a press conference and say, I got the guy. He's my guy, and we're going to make him the greatest of all time. He's not going to be the greatest of all time. Where will he be in the conversation? He lost the home playoff game last year, lost the home playoff game to a team in Kansas City that went on to win the Super Bowl. Wanted to mention Xander Schauffele winning the Open Championship. That was brilliant. He came from behind, slaughtered everybody on Sunday with a brilliant back nine. That's how you get it done.
Let's see if this is a mark or a tap. Xander Schauffele circling around, walking up to the ball. This is going to end it. Xander Schauffele with a par on the 18th hole. He is the winner of the 152nd Open Championship at Royal Troon Golf Club with a score of 9 under par for 72 holes. He is your champion golfer of the year.
That was fantastic. That's courtesy of Sirius Golf Channel. Schauffele after the round. His parents were there, his dad, his whole team, his caddy. Thank them all.
I'd like to thank my entire family, my team, everyone on my team. They know who they are. It's been quite a journey. I feel very honored hearing your name called with Open Champion right after. It's something I've dreamt of for a very long time.
Very cool. And Bobby, I wanted to end with the Ohtani bomb. You know, I lived out in L.A. for 10 years. My kids grew up there when they were toddlers. We went to a bunch of Dodger games, saw a lot of home runs end up in the bleachers, but I've never seen ever a home run end up here.
2-1 is hammered. Deep right center field. Way out of here. And Ohtani joins the home run party. A 30 home run season for Shohei Ohtani. Oh, how do you like that? 473 feet.
That where that ball ended up, almost dead center field on some pavilion area. Oh, my God. Just incredible. And Judge hit one at the Yankee game. And Judge and Ohtani putting on a show this year. All right, so Q's coming up next. He's always got a big show for you. Listen to Q as you always do. I'm driving out to Costa Mesa tomorrow morning, and we'll be out there tomorrow afternoon for the rest of the week here. Keep it here to Raider Nation Radio, also on the Raider Nation Radio app. Everything that we're doing on Raider Nation Radio social media to find out what we're doing here the rest of the week, and that'll be the next 3 weeks. Here on Sunday, Monday, back in Costa Mesa, Tuesday to Friday, and coaches, players, and a lot of good insight as we count down. Today we did number 10. We'll pick it up at number 9 of the greatest games of all time. And we've had a little pushback here and there, but we've had a good time putting it together. Thanks to Bobby, who's doing the majority of that work with the sound. And we had no guests today because we knew we had these two games, and you guys were all great on the other side. Sirius XM tonight, 4 to 7, over at Wynn, and then Costa Mesa tomorrow. Good to be back in Vegas, and good to get out of here again for a little bit of cooler weather. Have a great rest of the day, everyone.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.